Hi, this is Nate Sexton, and you're listening to Let's Snackoplast.
You're listening to Let's Snackoplast with Aaron Gossage.
I'm the disc golf guy, and you're listening to Let's Snackoplast.
Allesammans, or hello everyone, as I should say. This is Victor talking, and you are welcome to the podcast Let's Talk Plastic this week. Let's snack a plast. We are a bit international today, having a celebrity, I would say. A proper disc golf celebrity. Who's our guest today?
Gavin?
It's Gavin.
It's me, Gavin Babcock.
Awesome.
I would say we're quite international today. Not a bit. Very much so.
Yeah.
We are. So how's life with Gavin Babcock?
It's good. It's good. Just been going through my daily routine this morning. Got some discs to go field test after this, but just kind of... It's getting less than a week before I leave, so just kind of starting to plan some stuff, figure out exactly where I'm going, starting to pack up, and just continuing to learn the bag.
Nice. Is it quite a bit difference from last time you went on tour?
Yeah. I think just this whole year, yeah, just everything feels different. Like the new, this new plastic's been fine, amazing. Discmania is just so premium. And I've never got to really like experience throwing like all Discmania before. I've thrown some in the past, but yeah. And then out of the same van one more year, and yeah, I was very excited to get back out there.
Great.
Nice.
So, how would you describe the plastic? If you compare it to your old plastic? Not to dump on everybody, but
just very premium. And it's like interesting because I've been like flicking the stock Creator Series Cloudbreakers, and they're just like I know they just go so much farther. It's like where the disc is turning and where it's fading, and like it's such a cool flight, and just a lot of the discs are flying like this I've never been able to throw before, and they really are just different. And so just trying to take those for what they are. But yeah, my forehand, like with the Cloudbreaker, I've been getting them like 430 pretty consistently, just accurate. And I'm excited to see how this year goes.
Do you feel it being easy to find the disc for the right situation? Do they have good system?
Yeah, they're like, I'm trying to figure out where PDs fit into the bag, because like I definitely want to bag them, and there's a reason why almost every Discmania Pro has like two. And so I'm understanding the hype about that disc, and so I'm trying to figure out where exactly that fits and what I'm going to use it for. But I mean it's just been so fun.
Yeah, I'm thinking also that you're coming from Prodigy, right? They have this very elaborate system with the number things and letters and everything. It's maybe milder to go to Discmania because they also have the PD, FD, and all that instead of going to like Latitude with just sinus and everything.
Yeah,
it doesn't say anything about the disc's characteristics. At least you have the FD and PD and MD.
Yeah. Where it's I think like reversed with Discmania, where one, like the closer to one, like is the least stable, where Prodigy is the most stable. But I really just been throwing the discs and like taking them for what they are. And same thing at Prodigy, because I mean, I could throw a D1 and it'd be flippy. And so I just kind of take the name for what it is, but, definitely matters more how it's flying than anything. But these are just pretty consistent. Everyone that I get that says DD3 flies like a DD3 for the most part. And yeah.
Nice.
Because that's one of the things that I've been hearing before with Prodigy being sometimes like the runs are so different. Because that's been a big complaint I know before. I don't know how it is now. And as I said, not to be like talking shit about anything, but I just heard that some of the like the old plastic is really, really good. And it's so many people want like the old plastic because it's been more beefy and stuff like that.
Yeah, like last year I think I dropped like $220 on two test M2s, and those were just like my mids all year. And they're like, there's a reason Ganon is throwing those, and so I finally like it kind of hurt dropping that much just on two discs to like throw, and but it was well worth it. And like the old M4s, like the old plastic was really good. And then towards the end of the year, once they started pumping out that new 500 plastic, things were getting a little headed in the right direction, and I started bagging some of the newer stuff. But yeah, it's already so much easier. Just like, I mean, I know exactly how a C-line PD is going to fly or like fly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, I threw like, yeah, just some of these shots I'm already like developing confidence in so quickly with the disc because like I have in my head how it's going to fly. And take the wind into effect, and then it does exactly what I think. And it's like, okay, it takes like three of those shots to like fully trust a disc. And so some of those, it is just like exactly what I think it is. And then like three, four just money shots later where it does exactly what you think, you're just like, all right, that's in the bag.
I think, Ted, regarding consistency, I think everyone
gets
flamed for consistency. It's hard. It's very tough to keep them going.
Yeah, but I heard from some people throwing Prodigy as well, like the new things being developed in China, that those runs are more consistent than what they used to have before as well. I don't know if that's true, but I heard some, like, you know, the new P Model S and M Model S and stuff like that, a lot of people like them because they were like really nice, straight up, and kind of consistent as well. But yeah, this is not going to be an episode about Prodigy at all. It was just a funny thing to talk about, as since like you're going on tour and with the brand new bag as well. And
yeah,
it's nice.
It's just fun. We can't keep ourselves. but we usually have a kind of a system running this podcast, and I'm going to let Ted.
Yeah, we have some kind of short questions just to get to know you a little bit better, and for our audience as well, if you want to know those. So, yeah. Cool.
Åtta korta.
This is Victor's jingles as well, so.
I like him.
That's Swedish for eight short ones.
Thanks.
What's your full name?
Gavin Lee Babcock.
Right, and how old are you?
I'm 23 years old, be 24 in March.
Yep. What do you do for a living? That's more of, I kind of think you're a disc golf professional, right?
Yeah, this is full-time gig, luckily.
Yep.
What did you do before?
I graduated college and then went straight out onto the road. So I was thinking about heading out in the medical sales direction if I didn't do this. But then once I fully committed to this, but otherwise just kind of worked at Menards, worked for a mechanical and roofing company before, just some summer jobs before that. But yeah.
What about
What
about the wrestling you did before? Did you do it professionally? Did you earn any money, or was it only?
No, I wrestled from like kindergarten through junior year of college. And so it was like 15 years. And then I didn't wrestle senior year because they canceled nationals before the season even started due to COVID. And, so I just saved my body. And then that's kind of when I realized I was going to commit to this. So I think that everything happened for a reason. And that was like the first off season where I could like fully kind of dedicate to disc golf, and so that was that. But yeah, I mean, I'd wrestle in the summers and travel around the United States doing tournaments and stuff in high school and then in college and stuff. So but never professionally or money, just for myself.
Good.
Cool. What's your family situation?
I got mom, my stepdad here, and then I have an older brother who's 4 years older, and then I have two younger brothers that are, yeah, so my older brother, I guess, is 27, and my two younger brothers are 19, but one on my mom's side and one on my dad's side, so they're not twins, but yeah. Yeah, that's and then an Australian Shepherd. He's a fatty.
Nice,
cool. What was the first course you actually played disc golf on?
It was in Newton, Iowa, Maytag disc golf course, and it ended up being where I got my first pro win in 2019 as well, which was pretty cool because I'd kind of learned about it in like junior high and like played like maybe a couple times a summer, but never really got into it. Again, my grandparents lived there and I lived there as well when I was younger. And then, yeah, and just kind of grew up learning on that course and then kind of started branching out to some other local courses and was able to get the first sanctioned win on that one, which was, yeah.
Awesome. What was your first disc you ever owned?
I'm trying to think. I want to say it was a yellow Star Boss. I'm pretty sure it's in there. It's still it was my first ace disc too. But yeah, I was big. I started out like sidearm only, and I couldn't get enough Star Bosses. They were just so money just for those big flex sidearms. Mm. And then once I got one to beat up and could like flip one up, and yeah. I think it was a Star Boss, and I putted with a Star AVR too, a light blue one.
Mm.
Throughout the years, which disc have replaced the Star Boss in your bag?
It went from Star Boss to Star Destroyer to, and then to an X-Cal, and then D1s replaced that, and now I have a DD3 and a PD2 that are like kind of those slot. And I have an S-Line PD2 that's kind of my workhorse right now.
Nice.
What was the last disc you bought?
Last disc I bought. Actually, just the other day, I went over. There's a guy in Des Moines, Iowa, who's like a huge Disc Mania collector, Peter, and he. I bought a couple Lux Links off them, two like special edition, like Neo Tactics that are a little puddle top that have like a little more shallow feel for my sidearm, and Money S-Line DD3. So I bought those five from him the other day.
Nice. Yeah. If you were to say one thing that people really don't know about you, what would that be?
Ooh. One thing that people don't know, I got a music minor in college. I played the piano for a little bit, I guess. Mm-hmm. So maybe that. Yes.
All right. And, what do you think about cilantro in food?
Oh, big fan.
Nice.
Big fan.
Great. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That one is
one point
nice.
To the right side.
Yeah. I don't like it when I don't understand when some people like get that gene where they think it tastes like soap.
Yeah.
Or like don't like, and it's like you are missing out.
Oh yeah. That Jonathan from Latitude 64, he thinks it's like actually tastes like soap.
Yeah.
He has
it's
the gene.
So weird.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So, Anders, do you want to take the trivia?
Yeah, for sure. I was just lying in the couch earlier in this evening, so I thought, hell, we should do something with our international guests. just try their Swedish knowledge a little bit. So I made up a short but fun little Swedish trivia for you.
Nice.
Should we do a jingle in it as well?
Oh yeah.
Here we go.
Feel the tension.
The Swedish trivia.
Do some dramatic voiceover.
Yeah.
Bernie, Bernie.
Swedish trivia.
Bernie, Bernie. So, what do you have as a side with your Swedish meatballs? Multiple, what do we say? Multiple
choices.
Yeah. Multiple choice.
Multiple yep. choice, yes. Is it lingonberry, cranberry, or blueberry?
What was the first one?
Lingonberry, cranberry, or blueberry?
I'm going to go lingonberry.
Correct. We need to get some kind of bling.
Yeah, I forgot about sound effect.
We'll develop this with time.
This was actually 2 minutes before yeah. we actually started got you in the lobby. So, yay!
Victor has the guitar now, so it's okay. So, a little sports. Who is not a Swedish tennis player? Mats Wilander, Boris Becker, or Bjorn Borg?
I'm going to go B.
Boris Becker.
Boris Becker, correct. He's German. He was recently in jail. So, special trivia. So, music question. Which band is not from Sweden? ABBA, Sepultura, or Entombed?
I feel like I'm gonna get this wrong. ABBA?
ABBA is from Sweden. You know, it's Agneta, Bjorn, Benny, and Annefrid. Yeah, they're a Swedish treasure.
I knew I shouldn't.
Sepultura is from Brazil. Right. And Sweden is, or Entombed is from Sweden as well.
Okay.
Which film star is not from Sweden? Joel Kinnaman? Viggo Mortensen? Or Alicia Vikander?
Joel
Kinnaman is from Sweden. Viggo Mortensen is not.
He's Danish, isn't it?
Yeah, Viggo. For sure.
Aragorn in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Isn't he?
Yeah. It's a Danish creep. No, he's good. what company is not from Sweden? Spotify? H&M? Or Häagen-Dazs, the ice cream company.
H&M.
H&M is from Sweden.
It's all
I got hot.
Yeah,
I got hot quick.
Yeah,
yeah,
falling off.
You'll get this one, the final one, and it's sort of wrapping this up. What disc golf brand is not from Sweden? Prodiscus. Castoplast or Momentum discs?
Momentum.
It's from Sweden. It's Prodiscus. It's from Finland.
I didn't.
They're Finnish.
I didn't know where Prodiscus is from.
But this was also meant not to enlighten you a little bit of Sweden. So it's okay. Yes. You learned something today.
Momentum is a really small company as well.
Yeah.
And
I had not heard of them.
No. I don't think they actually spread outside of Sweden yet.
Okay. There's a huge following in sold millions in the States. No, they have not yet.
I guess they aim for Africa and so on.
Yeah.
Easy to throw discs for.
As Prodiscus actually, it's Kevin Jones' old.
Yep.
So and also mine. I used to be on Team Prodiscus way back when I actually did play some good disc golf, not shit disc golf that I do now. So
you're still doing, Ted.
Yeah, but you're actually throwing some Swedish plastic right now. It's made in Sweden.
Oh yeah, nowadays. Yeah. Yeah.
It's become quite the disc golf mecca up in the northern parts of Sweden.
Yeah, and I'm hoping I can make it over there one day. That'd be huge.
Mm.
Yeah, I would like that too. So that's something.
Even for special. Us, it's kind of Anders Anders was actually one of the guys who made the first Castaplast disc in just here where I live, and Anders.
Yeah.
So and they actually was bought by Latitude, so now they are made in Skellefteå as well.
Yeah.
Right next Sweet. To the Discmania factory. So.
Or rather, Latitude is a stake owner now in Castaplast, not the full owner, but their part owner. So they moved all the production up to Skellefteå as well. And that's very good, because they know how to produce discs in at Latitude. Oh, yeah.
All right. So, Gavin, where did it all start for you with disc golf and so on?
I started kind of getting into it a little more like in 2015, and it was one of my aunt's friends at the time talked me into signing up for the PDGA, and then played my first tournament at Pickard Park, which is now where the Des Moines Challenge is played, and it was like 40 mile an hour winds and it was just like miserable. And I remember taking like it, I took like an 8 on the par 5 on 18, and it was in an easier spot than it is now. And I had pros coming up to me like, oh my gosh, you took an 8. Like, that's such a good, like, people are just taking double digits because it's into like a 40 mile an hour headwind and like uphill. And it was like, I think the first, cause I started on 18 and the first tee shot, I think his name is Chris. He teed off and we were in wreck. So none of us were like crazy good. I think my first rating was like 834 or something. And he threw it like straight up in the air and blew like 150 feet into the woods, like behind the tee pad. And he was laying 3, like 10 feet in front of him. And, it was just miserable, but everyone was so nice and the community was awesome. And that was like kind of my first experience with that. And it made it very easy to get hooked and just keep wanting to come back.
And that's impressive to go with, this is fun after a kind of treatment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how do you think your wrestling background sets you up for this golf? Do you have any advantages physically, maybe?
Yeah, I think, physically, I think just like knowing how my body feels and just kind of being aware of like, of my health kind of. And I mean, just the hard work aspect that I learned from wrestling, and the mental toughness and strength. I mean, like, I've experienced so much in the wrestling world that where like anything that happens in disc golf, like I shouldn't be that like worked up about realistically. And mm-hmm. I try to live by Dan Gable's saying, once you've wrestled, everything else in life is easy. So, I mean, I've been through a lot and I think just the mental aspect and how I view disc golf, like I love it when people are just like, oh man, I got so unlucky, oh this kid, and like I don't really think that there's like bad luck, it's just good luck, because if you hit the tree, like you threw a bad shot. And like there's bad luck in very few, like Robert Burridge at Des Moines Challenge, like hitting that stump from that far away, there's nothing he can do to control. That's bad luck. And I also think everything happens for a reason, but like if I throw a shot and it hits a tree, I threw a bad shot. But if someone else throws a bad shot and like gets a good kick, that's good luck. So it's either a bad shot or good luck. There's no bad, bad luck. Like you can get a bad kick from a bad shot, and so I love when people start just like thinking that they're the unluckiest player in the world and just start getting on top of themselves. And it's just like, all right, like I've already beat you mentally. I've already beat you mentally. And just like, I try to find little mental advantages to where I can just kind of gain over my competitors, because there's nothing I can really do other than play good disc golf to try to get to them, where obviously in wrestling, it's much more physical.
Mm.
Mm.
Cool. Totally. Is this something you bring when playing on a card, on a competition? Is it something you bring on the first tee? Do you think about your mental strength and your advantage, or is it something you think about when you're done with a round? Or are you aware of your mental strength throughout the round?
Yeah, I think I more so practice like the positive reinforcement and positive self-talk and stuff. Like more so, I think it's harder, honestly, in practice rounds when you're throwing a lot of shots and can get tired and stuff. So I practice it more there. So then when tournament time comes, I can just focus on the shot and then it comes naturally. And then after the round, I can kind of reflect if it was good or bad, but I don't necessarily like. The only time I'll really think of it during the round is if I feel like it's like really struggling, but it's kind of a cheat code. If you just like, don't let yourself react to like a bad shot. Like if you just continue just like, all right, like it's all good. Like we'll get the next one and just don't react. Like it's, I mean, I could have a terrible front nine, but like by hole 10 or 11, like it's at least going to kick in. I know at some point during the round, it's almost like a little like adrenaline, like endorphin rush where I'm like, all right, let's just play the best golf we can. And then everything starts clicking and then I'll like finish out strong or something. And so if you just like, don't let yourself react and just force it to I really do think it's a cheat code, but so many people have such a hard time with that, that they like don't, they've never really experienced it.
I'm one of those guys. Mental game is the worst. And while playing with someone like you, that's only positive and don't thinking about the worst shots, it's terrible for me.
You know what you got to do, Victor? You got to start wrestle.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think also, Gavin, just the whole thing about physique as well, like being a wrestler, that's like such a hard workout and you get in really good shape. Because I mean, like wrestlers, what kind of wrestling did you do? Was it like Greek Roman or?
I did all three throughout, but the main one was folk style, which is like mainly just here in America. And then, but in the summers I would do freestyle and Greco.
Yeah.
I think I was better at freestyle, but my favorite was Greco just because I had long arms and I could get like a body lock from kind of anywhere.
Yeah, but I mean also like just the whole body workout that you get from wrestling, doing like all these things, doing like a really long day on the course, kind of, I mean, it takes its toll on so many people, but having like a really good ground physique that I think you do probably made you last during the whole season as well, even if you don't like get to like practice or work out that much. I mean, I think just the basic foundation of your like wrestling background kind of helps out, I think.
Yeah, because like, I mean, and it's one of those things too, like I have a heart, like just like when I never considered disc golf like exercise or workout until I started doing it full time. Like my legs just got like shredded just from walking like constantly. But like it irritates me a lot when I get like, if I do ever like start to get tired at disc golf and like, I just don't ever let that get to my head. Cause I'm like, you've been way more tired than this before. Like this is nothing. And yeah, so I do think my endurance is something that helps me out a lot, like on the courses, especially the big ones or like places like Diglo. And but I mean, I do also feel like at least like five, 6 years older than what I am just from all the years wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I watched when you were on Johnny Disc Golf's show. And you talked about, you mentioned yoga. How is that coming to use? Do you feel, how does your body react to it? Since you mentioned it was pretty new for you.
It's been really good. I'm still trying to like find like a good routine that works for me. I just found one like morning routine that the last couple of days I've done that kind of like gets your body warmed up. But yeah, I mean, because with wrestling, it was very, like, I never realized how stiff I was until I started trying to do, like, I got more into calisthenics and just, like, body weight workouts. And then yoga to try to gain some mobility, because I've been very flat-footed, and last year I kind of was just, like, wasn't using my lower half to throw. And so I've been working on my backhand a lot this year and realized that in order to kind of help that gain process quicker, I needed to start doing stuff like that. And I've been lighter on my feet and just kind of getting more mobility and like a full reach back and just looking less stiff when I throw, which has been really good. Cause in wrestling, I just lift heavy. And if I like wasn't in there trying to like kill myself in the summer, just basically, and like my body just be super sore, then it wasn't enough. But I think it helped just kind of having no expectations and just starting a new type of workout on top of just like starting something like yoga that I'd never done before, and definitely noticing a lot of just like how kind of good my body feels after I do yoga for like the rest of the day.
Nice.
Yes. What type of style do you think describes your game?
I'd say conservative and analytical. Because I feel like I try to model my game probably most after Nate Sexton. Probably there. I mean, he has just such a dominant forehand, and me starting with a like sidearm, that's always been a very comfortable shot for me, just any angles and whatever. And so that's why I've been working on my backhand more, is because I feel like I have like a 10-30 or like higher rated sidearm, but my backhand's always been like lower, and my putting's been pretty solid, but he's kind of got that push putt style, like with his arm, but like still kind of like that spin, like spin of a spin putt. He got very swish putt, and yeah, just how he attacks holes. He knows where to play it safe, and like, okay, the odds of me getting the birdie here aren't great, so I'm just going to play it for par. And he knows he's going to play it, like basically get a par unless something weird happens. And so I've kind of taken that on to where I'll get a really good game plan during my practice rounds. And yeah, and just, I try to make sure I can birdie every hole if I needed to, like in the final round or something. And just so I can see myself getting the birdie. But yeah, I mean, I just can kind of smart, know my skill set and know what the percentages are of me either getting the birdie or the par, and I'll take the higher one there.
Yeah.
When we had Aaron Gossage on, he mentioned that while playing Worlds, he only did one throw that wasn't in his game plan. Otherwise, he kept to the game plan on every shot.
Yep.
Are you the same, mentioning you being conservative?
Yeah. It's very rare that I stray from the game plan. And I did realize that my best like performances, I did, like, it was as close to the game plan as I had. And it really just came down to like execution. And, cause when you're sticking to the game plan and throwing good and like you're on, then it's so hard to just get like a nasty kick off the fairway and stuff. But obviously, like, you just get put in different spots than in practice rounds naturally, cause like no one plays perfect. But yeah, I try to stick as close to the game plan as possible. And it's really just situational, whether I go for stuff or not. Like at Maple Hill, I needed as many points as possible I need to shoot as hot as possible final round to try to get into the Pro Tour finale. And so I went for 18 and ended up getting a birdie, but that wasn't like in the game plan. And, And yeah, so I mean, it's definitely situational, but I try to stick as close to it as possible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So, not to go into Simon too much, but who of the big fish made the biggest splash in your opinion this silly season?
Or because it's been a big talk amongst many, I mean, many podcasts and many people as well, like Paul moving from Innova to Discraft, and then Ricky moving from Innova, and yeah, basically a lot of, and then now Simon. A lot of people say that Simon's move actually made bigger, impact. Rings on the water than Paul's move from Innova to Discraft. Would you agree for that, or do you think it's kind of similar?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely felt weird. Like, I remember when Paul said he was going to leaving Innova, and I was like, what? Like, where could he possibly go? But now that he's at Discraft, like, I don't see him anywhere else.
Exactly. I'm the same, because I've been in the game so long, and I think a lot of newer people always seen Paul at Discraft, and you know, Discraft being this major player in the game. But I mean, before Paul went into Discraft, there were people throwing Discraft, but I would say since Paul moved there, I mean, I think that like the productions and everything's gone up so much since before. And now with Simon as well, I feel they are kind of similar in a way.
Yeah, I definitely think Simon is just more surprising, strictly because of his like where Paul's always been like a businessman kind of in the world of disc golf, but Simon is like created such a brand for himself through his YouTube.
Oh yeah.
And through with this mania, and it's just, it was definitely like when I found out about it, I was like, oh my gosh, like what is happening? And it just didn't feel like right. But I know wherever he's going to go is going to help the pick, like probably just build that brand up and create a powerhouse over there and help their lineup. I mean, he's got all the knowledge and everything, but who knows, in 5 years, we might just be like, yeah, I couldn't see him anywhere else either. And now it's back to Paul being the most surprising. Or
but. Yeah, but like those two people doing this, it's so good for the sport as well. Because I mean, it builds on this hype, and I mean, just Paul's being so monumental as well for people and players getting bigger contracts. Everything's out. Like before, you didn't talk about the numbers. Now people know that Paul made 10 million 10 year. That's like mind blown.
Yeah.
So I think that helped, you know, like everybody making a step
raised
forward.
The bar.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
But I was surprised when Ricky left Innova, but I wasn't as surprised as when Paul actually left Innova, and you were like, what? Like, what is he going to throw now? Like, because Ricky's been all over the place so many times as well. I mean, he's been back and forth.
Yeah, he's kind of, it wasn't as weird because, he had hopped around a little more. But yeah, I was just like, what's Paul going to throw besides Destroyers?
Exactly.
And I mean, now I just I think Simon, whatever, for him, I mean, he'd win a tournament and then just give away his bag and then just throw something new. So, I mean,
For him, it doesn't really matter. I mean, so many people just are, oh, what's this going to throw now? How's this going to feel? I mean, he's one of the best throwers of the disc in the game. Yeah.
Yeah. He can make anything work. So his angle control is just insane. And yeah. And I mean, of course, wherever he goes to, I'm sure he's going to get like 5 creator discs to.
Oh, yeah.
That he'll get to design on top of having some stock signature stuff, but it's gonna be fun.
Oh yeah, and it was like the most surprising this offseason, because I thought it was kind of a slow offseason as well. Like AB leaving, it was like, all right, this is something is actually happening, and then Valerie and Holland Hanley, and Valerie was one of those as well. Like, whoa, where's Valerie?
Yeah, Val, and then I was, and yeah, and Val. I mean, a bunch of those like kind of good middle players just leaving Innova, and then Mason Ford to Mint. I didn't see that coming. As soon as he left, I was immediately thinking Lone Star.
Yeah, and then same here.
Yeah, and then when he hit everyone with the Mint, I was like, oh, but I mean, that's gonna be cool because they got some premium stuff too.
And I think that's actually a cooler move than moving, because Lone Star was so everybody, like Lisa Fakus, and they picked up Emerson and a lot of people. And then you just like, okay, everybody's going to Lone Star or like Thought Space Athletics. And then all of a sudden, yeah, Mason Ford goes to Mint, and you're just like, what's Mint? And I think both for him and for the company, it's going to be a really good switch, because I think that he's going to make their brand pop a little bit, just as you see Clash Discs and stuff like that as well. So I think it's good sometimes that some people change a bit, because it's get exposure.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm always a big fan of, I mean, I've always kind of been more attracted to the smaller, like, companies, and or like not necessarily smaller companies, but smaller teams, because like compared to Discraft and how Innova was and Dynamic, whatever, like this Mania's like touring lineup, there aren't like near as many as like all those others. So I am a big fan of like kind of that smaller team feel, to where you can get close with the guys and try to make a big impact. So yeah, for him, for me, for everyone else going to those smaller companies, I think those are all good, solid moves.
Yeah, I was like, your move was kind of, for me, that when you announced that you left and then moved to Discraft, to Discmania, I was just like, this is super cool, because it's, I think that the fit is so nice for you as well. I kind of feel like the just that brand kind of fits your style as a more power player as well. So I think you're going to have another teammate. I don't know. Yeah, you probably played with Max.
Yeah. Big fan of Max.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's really nice. I mean, it's you guys need more people representing the Shields.
Nicholas Antle as well.
Yep.
Yeah, I was messaging Nicholas, and Max sent me a message as soon as I told him before I'd actually sign, I'd send him a picture of my links or something. And I've been excited to have kind of those some European teammates as well as just people here, because that's one thing I definitely missed in 2021. Was like last year, I feel like, was like the first year where so many people came over to play. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just meeting the Norwegians, the Finlands, the Swedes, just everything is super cool. And yeah, very excited for this year.
You're doing a lot of fishing? Is that something that you do?
No, not a whole lot. I did when I was younger, but I just haven't.
All right.
Haven't in a minute.
The Scandis like the fishing.
Yeah, and also Linus is really, really keen on going fishing. So you need to take him bass fishing.
Deal. I'll have to try to go out with them sometime this year.
Yep. Cool.
Gavin, I have to ask you. While talking silly season, how much of a common knowledge is it in the pro scene where the other pros are heading? Everything around this year's circus started while Chris Clemon wrote that thing on Reddit. Do you know what I'm talking about?
What did he write on Reddit again? I think I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember what he put.
He mentioned someone...
the big boys.
Someone wrote, my off-season guesses, an update. Page 2 to MVP. Anthony B to Infinite. Simon Lizotte to Discraft. And then Chris Clemons wrote, as Castro said, 0-3, but you have the pieces of the puzzle there. And that makes everyone think that Chris knows exactly where everyone's going. Is it so? Does everyone know where the other guys are heading? Or is it just some special guys that knows it?
I think we all kind of find out through the other pros, but we know how important it is not to let other people kind of know that, because one, that's not our information to share, and two, like, yeah, you don't want to ruin anything for anyone. But yeah, I think all slowly kind of figure it out. Like I do know where Simon's going. And like, I knew AB was going to Discraft, but like, there were a few, like, I had no idea where Mason was going. I had no idea where some of the Lone Star people were going. So some of them still are like a shock to me, but some of the bigger ones are just like, once you find out they're leaving, it can start hearing a little bit of stuff and put the pieces together.
But did you know before you signed that he was leaving?
I did. Mm. I did.
Nice.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, eventually we always gonna know. So
yeah, you have like a special players union hidden group on Facebook.
nothing like that, but that would be something. I feel like it'd definitely end up getting out quicker if we had something like that.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, just the whole thing, Discraft announcing their team yesterday was kind of, all right, they put the hammer down again, you could say, because I mean, they got a stacked team now.
Yeah, and I had no idea that they were getting Pollen or Valerie.
Mm.
And I mean, so those are two pickups that were like a surprise to me, but yeah, they're elite teams looking pretty solid.
Yep. And I think as well for Val, I think she was on DD like one year, was she?
I don't know how long.
Because exactly. I think they signed for 2 years, but I think they left after 1 year.
Yeah, that's correct. 1 year.
Yeah. So, okay. And I think that just fit with her and Alexis kind of made sense as well. And it feels like Discraft is more, how to put this without being like, but I think they, if you do good on competitions and stuff like that, they value that on a different plane than I think. I don't say that Dynamic don't, but I think that Dynamic is more branded, like your social media thing is pretty huge with them. I think Discraft as well, but I mean, I think Discraft rewards you if you're doing really good on competitions.
Yeah, Discraft's much more of a, I feel like, performance-based company where they want like just the best player. Like, obviously, they want you to brand them well, but yeah, like compared to some of the other companies, since they do have that stacked of a lineup, it is very performance-based. Because I mean, there's some good people that like got bumped down from the elite team.
Yep,
and so yeah, it is just kind of like earn it, and you can get it, which. I am a fan of that style, and I think that's why I hovered towards Dismanias. I just feel like...
Yeah, that's a little bit more like that as well, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit, definitely. I mean, you got to earn a signature disc, got to earn just everything, and I'm excited for this year to try to prove it.
I think that's a little bit more old school mentality as well. If you see at Innova as well. Innova has also been like... a little bit more performance. You earn your spot on the star teams and stuff like that, I would say. So,
yeah, and I know Ella Hansen was quite open with saying that she wanted a performance-based contract. Did you also get to level the stakes for you as well?
Yeah, I'll get like a Shield Series disc this year, which is still like a stamp I'll get to come up with, and it'll be on their Dismania's website, but retailers can't buy it, so you'll only be able to buy it through their website and support me that way. But I am on a 1 year contract with Dismania, so I can try to prove it, because I don't think I'm super far off from getting like a signature disc. And so if I have some good finishes, try to take down my first win and just have an overall good year, then I think I think we'll be headed in the right direction for something like that.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really nice following you on the tour this year. You made a splash, such as beat.
Thank you.
Yeah. We saw you on GK Pro Skins and on lead cards. What's the biggest takeaway from the season last year?
Definitely. I mean, the skins ace is definitely like just so sick, because I've never, like, I get chills every time I like say that. But I mean, as a kid, it was a dream to get on SportsCenter top 10, and so like seeing that was super cool, and that was hands down the biggest adrenaline rush I'd ever had. Mm-hmm. And the day before, I bring it up every time because people think I just ripped my shirt off because that was what, like, but I told Alden and I, like, all day I was just kind of being it, just being cocky, whatever, just like joking around. And I was like, dude, like, what am I going to do after I ace tomorrow? Like, what am I going to do with all that money? And I was just like saying stuff like that. And I was like, what should be my celebration after I ace? And then Alden and I were just like kind of BSing some celebrations, and we couldn't think anything. I was like, tell you what, if I ace, I'm just going to rip my shirt off and run it down. And so I started running, and then it popped in my head. I was like, shirt off, just took it off. But, yeah, so that was good, but I had to uphold my word, and I bought him and Isaac some pizzas after. But that was just such a cool moment, and really got a lot of exposure from that, which was cool. But definitely Champions Cup. I mean, I think I obviously made lead card there, and then was on chase card round three at Worlds, and then chase card, I think, round three at USDGC as well, or it might have been round four. And Champions Cup was probably my biggest takeaway, because that was the first time I'd ever, because I believe in myself, but I'm also a realist and know where I stand. But that was the first time where I genuinely, going into the round, was like, why not? Like, why not me? Like, I'm put myself here. I've played three great days. Like, I can win this. And it was the first time getting that feeling, like, I genuinely believe I'm the best player this weekend, and putting myself in that position to win. And it was such good experience, that and Worlds, to just have that late tee time and have that kind of swagger just walking around like I'm still in it. And it's such a, like, from wrestling, I've always been on, like, in high school, like, state championship team, college, we were always kind of ranked like top, like, that 10 to 12 in the nation range, and just like winning and competitiveness is huge. It runs in my blood pretty heavy. And so that, like, I've been missing that, like, winning competitiveness feeling. 'Cause sometimes it does just feel like it would, before that, it kind of feel like I'm just trying to cash, or I'm trying to get top 25. But I always hated deep down that being my goal. And now, like, I mean, like, why play a tournament unless I'm aiming to win? So it's a very important experience and takeaway for that. But it helped me realize that I'm just as capable as anyone else that weekend. Mm.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I mean, your steppers is great. I would
deadly.
Yeah, I would kill to have a putt like that. It was, yeah, awesome.
Thank you.
That was 2022, but if we aim forward, what are goals for 2023 next this year, not next year?
I'd like to get my first win, just get some more time, make more lead cards, make more coverage. I'd like to hit at least like 1025. I don't think they're, I mean, these discs, I've heard some people say just like, oh, that's going to be a 10 point rating jump. But I do genuinely believe it with how these things are flying. I have so much confidence in what I do know already, that like, it's unreal. And so I think consistency and just eliminating some of those bad finishes, put myself in contention more, and just kind of jumping up to like 10-25 or higher would be a solid year.
So how's your touring situation now? Are you, do you have a van or something?
Yep. I've been out of just a small little Chevrolet City Express. Last couple of years, I have a full-size twin mattress in the back, and that's basically all the room I have. It's lofted, so I have storage underneath, and then like a little cabinet next to me, and then spot for like my bag and my cart. But yeah, and then solar panel with battery. So it's really, if I'm in there, I'm either sitting in the front seat or in my bed. But I think after this year, as long as everything goes good, then I should be able to upgrade to something bigger that I could actually stand up in. And so I fit perfectly, and this thing's gotten me, been very reliable and gotten me exactly where I need to be. So
nice. You're such a nice guy, so you can stay with the other guys in their luxury vans and hang out, and you can go to bed in your van.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm hanging out in I hang out in Luke Sampson's RV, hang out with Alden, and then he'll pull out his awning sometimes. I was hanging out in the Norwegian's RV a little bit last year with like Trulis, Knut, Blair, and Peter. But it's fun just kind of bouncing around and just hanging out with other people and seeing their setups too.
Nice.
I saw your new wrap on your van. The polo pattern.
Yeah.
It's looking really good.
Brainwave. Thank you. Yeah, I was super stoked how that turned out. And I didn't want those because I'd spent a little bit of time thinking about like what pattern I kind of wanted to be like sort of involved with like my brand, I guess, and that like brainwave kind of pattern just for like to represent like that mental toughness kind of aspect. I liked a lot. So I didn't want that to go away after being with Prodigy, and I didn't want that to be a Prodigy thing, but a me thing. And so I'll have those made again with the Discmania logo in different colors. And and then I got some other stuff coming out in 2023 that I'm excited for. So
nice.
Cool.
I saw something done with Luke Sampson amongst more that you guys were doing some urban disc golfing thing kind of. What was that all about?
So it was his buddy from college that he played baseball with. He had the idea, and it was David and I can't remember his buddy's name that was helping out videoing and stuff too. But yeah, we were in Music City Open. He just like had the idea and gave it to us, kind of pitched it to us like a week prior, or Luke told me about it. And I was like, this would be sick. I'd seen some urban disc golf when I was like first starting on YouTube, and I always thought that'd be sweet to do and never got the chance to. So that was super fun. And I think we're filming season 2 of urban disc golf after Vegas this year. Over in that area. So I'm excited. We're going to get a couple more holes. So it's not just 4, to get a few more episodes and very, very excited to see how that turns out.
Cool. Cause I saw some really weird things with discs flying over a bridge and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some sketchy holes, definitely some backup discs, backup discs involved and lost forever. But
cool. Where can we find it?
It's on Trendlender Promotions YouTube channel. And they actually have he's buddies with some NFL players that were from Iowa, and they did like a curling match, and so you can check that out on there as well. But it's a pretty fun YouTube channel, and he's looking to upgrade the quality, and the season 1 is just kind of the tester season, if you will. Mm. I think there might be some new people on there besides Luke and I. And cool. And he's got some good ideas for upgrades. So
cool. We'll provide the link so that people can find it. That would be awesome.
Awesome.
We're actually talking about curling. I used to be an arborist, doing like arboriculture work with chainsaws and climbing and stuff. During winters up here, we get kind of a lot of snow and ice sometimes. And so we were parked on this nature reservoir thing, and they had this huge parking lot full of ice. So we had the chainsaws. We have had a handle on top of it. So we actually did curling with the chainsaws on this huge parking lot.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
So, is that on YouTube as well?
No, it wasn't. This was before YouTube era. I'm too old for everything. Yeah, me and my friends been talking about it because we've done a lot of crazy stuff within the arboriculture and things like that before, like the YouTube things. I'm too old, Gavin. I'm turning 45, so it's been a while. So
that's not that old. That's not that
I know.
Old. I'd say throw that thing back up on YouTube. I bet that
would be sick.
Traction.
Yeah, I think that would be sick, to be honest.
All the possibilities now with drones and.
Yeah, hopefully, if there are some American disc golf players listening to this podcast, you can steal the idea if you want and put it up on YouTube. No worries. So
sounds like a Jackass thing.
A little bit. All right, boys. We got some listener questions. To be
pull
honest.
A jingle.
Pull a jingle. Yeah, yeah. We will.
Been too long.
Can I just mention something before going into the listening's question?
Of course you can.
This is pretty shameful. I have to confess something, Gavin. When you played Champions Cup, the Disc Golf Pro Tour posted that you were 100% C1X putting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And me as a jealous, I don't know, I can't describe it.
Circle 1X putting in percentage.
I wrote to you in the comment section, spending a half eternity before each throw allows you to do that kind of stuff. Do you remember that?
Oh. I think I saw that.
Ooh. Yeah.
That was him.
You answered to it and wrote, glad you enjoyed.
That's the right way.
Yeah, sounds like something I'd say.
Immediately, 100% guilt and shame.
Yeah.
Just jealousy. and it's so, yeah. I just wanted to mention it.
Oh no, it's all good. I don't take offense to any online comments or anything because I don't let any of that stuff get to me. But on some of those, I mean, yeah, I definitely took some time because that was like first time I'd ever been in that situation, and I mean that when it just kind of the pressure just keeps building, it is insane how important it is. But yeah, I definitely think the Pro Tour also could maybe not show the full routine on live.
I've got a thing about this because I think the whole thing about time, the time rule, is so subjective as well. Because I'm not a huge fan of it. I think that speed of play would be more the way to go. And I mean, in the situation that you guys are in, playing for huge amount of money and stuff like that, why on earth would you have to take 30 seconds to commit to a putt when it's like so much money on the line? Because I think the Pro Tour and every other competition on the world should have like different rules from the PDGA.
I mean, it just is like, yeah, like you said, so subjective. It depends on where your lies at. I mean, some lies take more than others. And it's also one of the things speed of play is definitely important. Like if people are waiting behind you, like there's no need to take a minute on a putt. But like if no one's like behind you and it is like a super important putt or super tricky, like, I mean, be reasonable, but also like, I mean, I think in order to get the highest quality of disc golf, like I mean, if you just to allow maximum focus and just increase the level of play, I think a little more than 30 seconds sometimes is necessary just because of the situation, the moment. And yeah, and I did get an unofficial warning on hole seven from, I can't remember her name, one of the PGA officials at Champions Cup. And like, I
didn't want Nico on him or her.
What'd you say?
You didn't want Nico on her.
No, I did not. I'd never do that. But, yeah. And I like turned my caddy. He's like, have I been taken like that long? And he's like, not like I, and I went up and asked Chris and Calvin. Mm-hmm. And I was like, have I been taken like too long? They're like, no, not that I know of. Like, no, you've been fine. And then I talked to my caddy. He's like, yeah, just don't worry about it. And so I got called for an unofficial warning, but it did kind of like rattle me a little bit and kind of make me just feel like the next hole or two, mm-hmm. just like rush my routine. And that's kind of when I went stale, which is my own fault at that for letting mm-hmm. it get to me. But yeah, because I think it was hole like eight and then bogeyed nine maybe, and then I had a quick talk with my caddy, and then I think went birdie par birdie and kind of got back on the train. But it definitely like kind of threw me off, and then I was thinking about how long I'm taking rather than the shot I'm throwing, and just messed with my routine a little bit. But
yeah, but yeah, I just think, like, put it into perspective if you want. 30 seconds a minute, because like on the card, if you give people a minute to putt, not everybody's going to putt within a minute. Like, some people, if they're really fast on their routine, they're still going to putt faster than like punch out the full minute. Some people would take the minute. Some other people, like me, I'm usually pretty fast on the green, and like on the tee box as well, I never take. But that's just me in general. I, you know, standing on the tee box, I know what discs to throw and stuff like that. Sometimes if it's, you know, the weather and whatever. But I think some people need a little bit more time. Why don't give them? Because, I mean, what does that affect me at the end of the day? A tournament round is due to take a lot of time anyways. And I think, as you said, being on the lead card, you have nobody behind you. You're not like putting anybody else in shits for it, like being on the first card of the day, and then you do shit and just, you know, walk in really slow to your discs and stuff like that. I mean, that speed of play for me is more important than on the green, because I think on the green you kind of tidy it up pretty fast anyway.
Yeah, and like people like Macbeth and like some other like just fast players, like they're not gonna change how the, like, so many people aren't going to change their routine and how fast they putt because that's what they need. And like, I would still, like, I've always been kind of a, depending on the putt, like right around that 25 second range is probably my average, just like right, probably just mid 20s. But yeah, if it is like a super windy headwind, whatever, then I mean, yeah, it's just, if the weather's kind of a factor, then it's just like some, yeah, like you said, some people might take that, but I feel the same way as you do on the time rule. But then again, I just kind of go with whatever's in place, or try to at least.
And I mean, as well, the whole thing about people like on the card, you are supposed to call out somebody else on the card, giving them time violations and stuff like that. That is just so bad. I mean, we kind of, in a way, I would say more officials would be better, because you don't want to be the guy, you know, if somebody has a really bad day and you are the one that always like, oh, come on, you know, things like that.
Yeah. And I also don't like at Champions Cup, we were one of the only cards that like a couple officials were just following. So what, now we get just zoned in on, and the other people don't have any officials. So now Chase Card's getting that 45 seconds as long as no one says anything, but
yeah, exactly.
I get said something if I hit 30. And so, yeah. And like, I've said something to people too. I've never given anyone a warning, but I was like, hey, like, you'd be just cautious of your time. 'Cause there's a round at Beaver State last year, and it was raining. And this, I can't remember who I was playing with, and I probably don't want to name his name anyway, but he went back to his bag like four or five times to grab a different disc while it was raining. And it probably took like a minute and a half to 2 minutes. And we're just all sitting there looking at each other. And like, usually if my card mates are just like, oh my gosh, like mouthing stuff to me, then I'll just be like, hey, like, is it possible you just kind of like be cautious at the time? And be like, oh yeah, no problem. And then it's not a problem the rest of the time. Mm. And so, I mean, it's also, if people do have a problem with it, just kind of like, I don't think there's anything wrong with just like asking, hey, can you speed that up? And I mean, even if someone had a problem with me, I'd hope that they speak up and they're not just mouthing stuff behind me and then all upset with me the rest of the round. I'd rather them say something to my face and then I can be like, oh yeah, no problem. And fix it if I am doing something that's not within. But
now, as you said as well, like with only lead card having officials, that's so bad. Mm. It would be every card have an official on the way out.
They started making them where they were just like officials just kind of walking through the course.
Yep.
And will like stop and just kind of watch like the last half of your hole or something, or ask like if we've had any trouble or anything. And that was kind of better throughout the year. But yeah, definitely not just an isolated group.
Now, if you want to do an isolated group, you should do all the groups isolated. Because otherwise, it's such a disadvantage to have just the official, and then you have somebody else who's taking like, oh, there's a backup there. Oh, which card is it? Who's on the card? Like, oh. it doesn't play out good, I think.
We give the hammer to Elaine King in the studio. She can be the official.
Ooh. Don't go there, Anders. Don't go roasting.
Sorry, Elaine. We love you.
Might be one of the most talked about things the whole year, I would say.
Oh.
Yep.
So, listener questions.
Yes.
We can take one from a live audience. We have our patrons live in the audience, some of them at least. And we have one guy. He can be the first one who has asked a question. And it is Erik Huldin. What course on tour do you look forward to the most?
Definitely. I mean, it's not a completely unbiased WR Jackson, because like before the tournament even started, I switched on my UDIS profile, WR Jackson, my favorite course. And like, as soon as I played it for the first time, I just got on there immediately and just put WR Jackson, then just happened to have a great week. But it's just such a good, I love wooded golf. It's more satisfying, more rewarding, more shot shaping. I love like flipping stuff up and shaping stuff with my forehand and getting to throw some mid ranges. And, and so, I mean, that one for sure. And then Vermont is always, I mean, it's such a beautiful place and such a cool little spot. And I'm stoked to go there for Worlds this year. That's going to be,
is it the Beaver State? Is it? No, Beaver State Fling.
No, that's in Oregon.
Oh yeah,
that's I honestly don't know if it's, but yeah, that's like probably 36 hours apart.
All right,
but
sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. I was just thinking that the kind of similar. I mean, that part of the country is beautiful too. I did really enjoy Portland Open this year as well. The what they did with the golf course, was way better than 2021. That was one of the more fun courses I've played. So honestly, yeah, probably courses like that. And then Smugs is just, Vermont, unbeatable.
Smugs it is. Sorry.
No, you're
always
good.
I always get those confused a little bit, but, WR Jackson, I'm so stoked that the Champions Cup seems to be remaining there for, I mean, a foreseeable future. I think that the venue for that major it makes so much sense. Just like USDGC at Winthrop as well, like to be writing history. I think disc golf needs that a little bit, having those venues set for some kind of competitions so that we can grow the history a little bit.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that is a perfect spot to perfect spot to do it. I mean, USDGC is the more open, challenging OBs, can be windy, can be rainy, can what, like everything there. And obviously, like, that has its history. And yeah, I think it'd be awesome to have one of the best wooded tracks be the other major. And so you kind of get a feel. And then obviously Worlds is just bouncing around.
Mm. Yeah. And also, I just come to think about it as well, European Open being one of the other majors at the same course at the Beast in Nokia is also like, it's so much history in just that course. And
I've watched those tournaments so many times on Spin TV, mm-hmm. and just those old, that and Konopishe Open were like my two favorites to watch. And I've
Spin
been
TV,
dying
man. You bring,
to make
you bring
it over.
Back some really good memories. Spin TV.
Oh, that intro.
Yeah.
The intro, just like little music is, it just gets you amped up. Cause I don't really watch much like disc golf now.
Yep.
On Jomez or anything, but I've learned that I do like to go back and watch old golf that kind of gives me like that nostalgic feeling and just brings back a lot of memories from when I was like in rec intermediate.
Yep.
And like I've watched the 2014 Final Nine Japan Open probably the most out of any other tournament on YouTube. And,
so cool.
And yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of, cause I've been from a time, like I started to play disc golf around 95. Ish, somewhere around there. So I've been in the sport back and forth a little bit, but I mean, I've been in the sport so long, and just like from going from live on a cell phone to Facebook to Spin TV and then to Jomez, and now to actually be able to watch the Disc Golf Network live in really good quality. And I mean, it's amazing. Just the, you know, the development it's been for me, it's so cool.
Yeah, it's and like, I mean, yeah, because obviously Jamie Thomas was like the main guy then, and it's cool to see like he's still kind of now helping with Disc Golf Pro Tour, and like some of those channels have dissolved almost a little bit, like but like those people are still relevant and just a part of a much larger thing, which has kind of been cool to see come to fruition.
Yeah, and also like the Disc Golf Pro Tour, just the thing that it's so big and so cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I can start with the first question from our listeners on Instagram, and that's my brother. He wants to know which is your favorite course.
W.R. Jackson.
Yeah, I know.
W.R. Jackson and... probably W.R. Jackson, Brewster Ridge at Smugs, Pickard Park in Iowa. I live like 30 minutes from that. And so that has been cool to see it evolve, because it was initially designed by Juliana Korver and then now kind of redone by Gannon Burr. And I will take credit for hole 11. Hole 11 was my doing. And so it's kind of cool to like have it, like one little piece be like tied into that like I helped out with, because I haven't done as much like messing around with course designing or anything as I would like, because I feel like I start to get a feel of what's good and bad. So
nice. Yeah. Cool. The next question is from Linus Carlson,
aka nice. Limpan. You need to call him Limpan.
Limpan, the loaf Limpan. In Swedish.
The loaf.
The loaf. Limpan.
Yeah. Right. The next time you meet him, call him the loaf.
All right, deal.
And he wrote, "Why are you so nice, man?"
Oh, I don't know. Why wouldn't I be nice? I try to just spread positivity. I like talking to people and I do enjoy every time I see Linus, no matter where I'm at. It's, hey, man. And it's just back and forth. And then if he's with Europeans, it's like they could have just all five of them got done playing and walked past. And every time, hey, man. Just until I've got every single one of them. And it's stuff like that. Like if you're not nice, then you don't develop those cool little connections with people.
Nice.
Yeah.
So JK Disc Golf, bagging DD3s or PD2s as the main driver?
Both, but definitely probably more going to end up more DD3s, just for like the bomber, like the flippier backhands into, I found a couple stable ones. And so I think right now I have, I think I have four DD3s and two PD2s for backhand. And then I do like to, it doesn't always work out that way, but I do sometimes have different discs that I forehand. And right now I just have one, one Cloudbreaker and one PD2 for sidearms. So, a good mix, but right now it's leaning a little more DD3 heavy.
Seems to be a really nice disc.
Yeah,
it is.
Maybe I need to try it.
Yeah.
Samuel Falmar, he wonders, how have you spent the 10K from skins?
Or have you?
Well, I haven't. I put a lot of it in the bank just so I could save up for the van and just kind of build a little cushion. But the only thing I bought were a sick pair of sneakers. I love me a cool pair of shoes. And I found a store in Portland that had like all the shoes were crazy expensive and they were all wrapped in plastic and just like super rare. And so I dropped like, I think just over 300 on a sick pair of Adidas Super Earth collaboration. And it was like, the shoes don't match and they're just like all these like crazy colors and they're sick. But that was the only thing I bought. And then I bought Alden and Isaac some pizza, like I promised.
Yeah. Nice. So,
just curiosity, is it tax-free or is it cash money?
They sent a check. So I'm not exactly sure if I'll need something or if I'll get 1099 or not. But kind of waiting game on that.
You have to ask someone of the big boys.
Nothing as of now. Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
You will have to send us a picture of those cool sneakers, yeah, so we can put them up on our Instagram for our listeners, yeah, to see them.
Deal. Honestly, I can go run. It'll take like 10 seconds for me to just go grab them.
I think Victor wants it as a picture, so we can put it on
send it over later.
I'll send a picture after.
Great.
Awesome.
Then the next question from Brett JG. He writes, what Discmania mold are you most looking forward to throw?
Either the PD or it's so hard. I've just been loving so much of these. Cause like, I really didn't find a 7-speed that was like super great or that I loved with at Prodigy. And so it's like the FVs are money. And cause I used to bag Leopard T-Bird back in like open bag. And so the FV's been nice. MD3 is like one of my all time favorite mids. So it's been super nice to throw that again. And the PD is just something I've never had before. I've never had that 10 speed and I've heard a lot of hype and they really just, it's weird. It's so controllable, but it goes so far and it's just that money stability.
Nice.
Awesome.
So Ileana has a question for you. Will you lose the shirt any ace or just those worth thousands? Congrats once more on the GK Pro Ace.
just probably those big ones. I have thought about if I ace on film or something, if I was on production, like start two and then look and be like, nah. just like a little, but yeah, no, that's probably a one time thing.
You need to do the money sign, shirt off, money. Mikkel Boy, he wonders, do you have any plans on playing in Europe and maybe even an extended tour in Europe? And he has a follow-up as well later, but yeah.
I'm still trying to get it figured out and worked out. I'm signed up for the signed up for Suwa, and then obviously European, like we have to wait for those sign up. So I'm gonna sign up for them and try to make it over there. I got my passport and everything. But yeah, it's just kind of, I mean, that's all new to me. So I'd have to just kind of figure out where I'm staying, how travel is going to look like, and talk to some other pros to see how doable and how much kind of that cost is going to look like. Because I mean, yeah, that's been a dream of mine ever since I started to go play those courses. So I'd like to go over there. And if I did go over, I'd like to stay over for maybe an extra week or two to either hang out or just play. I mean, I think the Konopishe Open is like somewhat around that
time, right before,
I think. And that would be sweet.
Mm-hmm. Also now as well with the new tour points and stuff like that, it's becoming really hard to earn the points because they put more into the, what is it? The plus events? What did you say?
Like the playoffs.
Yeah, also like
Elite Series Plus.
Yeah, Elite Series Plus. Yeah, you get like more points for that. And I know that's been a big talking point for the thing that Paul's doing now, like being on an extended Euro Tour, that he misses out a lot of the Elite Series Plus events as well to earn the points.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be tough for him, but. Honestly, I wonder if he's playing enough. If he were to just like end up demolishing the European tour, and then there's like a very slim chance that it's feasible. But if he were to just like get on a hot streak in the US and then like a hot streak over there, would be insane if they were able to pull off a two-time tour winner in the same year. Yeah. But
that would be.
I mean, I'm sure he's got something crazy like that in his head to try to fuel him, but.
Talk about like putting an end to all the haters out there for him as well. Like, oh, he's been washed up now. He's not that good. Stuff like that.
Oh, those guys drive me nuts. He's he's the best. He's the best. He
has such a high ceiling.
I mean, to be able to accomplish all he is while doing like just making trips to other countries and putting all this time in with other courses and putting a lot of the time into his foundation. And like, I was so nervous that the first time I was going to get to play with Paul, because he's been my favorite player like for a long time, like, as of a lot of people.
2014 and, Japan Open.
yeah, exactly. And I was afraid that he wasn't going to be like usually when you meet your heroes, it just doesn't live up to the hype and you end up having a bad taste in your mouth. But like, it was like, better than I expected, and it's rare that you get that experience, and I'm grateful for any time I get to play with Paul, talk to him, and just get little bits of information. But he really is just like a stand-up guy, and it's super cool. But all the haters, they can get out of here. Paul, Paul's not washed up.
Nope, he's not.
I hope he doesn't get washed up, because I want to, when I win my first tournament in my career, I want him to be playing good, so it feels just that much better.
Totally, and I think that says a lot for a lot of people as well. Okay, because the win means so much more when you actually beat like the people they look up to and they play their best. That kind of, you know. And I think, as you said, I mean, he has a really good chance on just demolishing the European Tour, because he's playing seven events, and I know that seven events, I think they count out six of them or something like that. So I think that he's got a really good chance on just crushing the whole thing, I would say.
Yeah, that's definitely what he's trying to do then, if that's how many it's worth. He's playing just enough to where you can have like two buffer events.
Yep.
And
yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Michael also asks you, what makes a great event? How does Elite Series compare to your local A tiers?
I think my biggest thing is communication, like getting an email like a week or two before the tournament and just kind of building the hype for the tournament. And then just if like, if there is any OB that's missing, it gets communicated and we're not finding that out on our own through practice. Like water on the course is huge. They always have player bathrooms. If they have a place for us to like sleep overnight at the park and to like park our vans and kind of get like a little big campsite for all the players, that's huge. And yeah, really just communication, well organized, and those little extra things like having water on the course. These courses are big, and sometimes you're on hole nine and you're so far away, and so when people are running around on just little vehicles and filling up the water stations, like it means a lot and it helps out a ton. Because I mean, you can only carry so much water in your bag without it either being crazy heavy or inconvenient. And then like, if you do carry enough, I mean, it's usually not enough, especially midsummer. So, the local A tier was like, used to be the dream. It was like, oh my gosh, I'm like, this is awesome getting to play multiple courses in multiple days. And yeah, now this, like doing this, it just puts like, you're spoiled out there when it's a well-run event.
Totally understandable.
Yes, and the next question is from Deipan. How do you keep calm and focus in such a high competitive level?
Positive reinforcement, just really not let my brain wander, really. Just try to, like, anytime I really, like, start thinking about, like, all right, I'm going to make that putt. And then like, what am I going to do next hole? I kind of just like shake my head quick and just get that thought out of there. And you still got to make that putt. And so just kind of like consciously focusing on like what you're doing currently and not what you're going to be doing helps a ton. And I do like to have like keep conversation light. And I like it when players, like, that's why I like playing with Paul. He's down to just have a little bit of a conversation throughout and like walking up the fairway and stuff. And I like that a lot when players in my card are kind of the same way. But yeah, just some deep breaths and positive self-talk. It goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. So Lotta Pressfeldt, did that Falcor ever return to your bag, or is it still left under the surface?
It is still at Eagles Crossing in the middle of the pond, because that thing just was so flippy after it hit that. Like, I didn't expect it to cause that much of an impact. Like, it was kind of like my bomber Falcor, but I hit that and that thing just turned, and yeah, she's gone forever.
Yeah.
Cool. We had another one from the chat here, and this is for all you people wondering what you get if you be a Patreon. I'm going to plug it a little bit. If we have things and we recording like we do now, you have the chance to be an audience on the show. So that's pretty cool. Erik Holdin is holding up here in the chat. He also has a question. Favorite snack while on the road?
Favorite snack on the road. I mean, beef jerky is just the best, but it's so expensive. So I try to load up. There's a place nearby that's got like the cheapest that I got around. It's actually at Menards, which is like a lumber yard store, basically, or just like a Home Depot type store. And their little snack section in the back of the store is like crazy cheap. And so I'll usually load up on beef jerky there. Otherwise, I try to eat healthier too. So like pork rinds. Pork rinds are like my chip replacement, and they're like string cheese. Usually those are like the go-to car snacks. And then the occasional energy drink and coffee.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
You need to get in touch with Double G to have him load you up the van before you get out.
I know. Luckily, with Gannon's new sponsorship too, I think he can pick me up a little bit.
Sugar Gannon.
Have you jumped on Linus Dr. Pepper train yet?
No, I try not to drink it, drink any pop, but I do. If I did, I mean, nothing when it's just middle of the summer and you just like chug a Coca-Cola is like, that is the sweetest. But they, at Champions Cup is definitely in my top five. Canute brought me over, Solo. It's like an orange soda. I don't know if you guys have, I don't know if that was just a Norwegian thing or if it's kind of all around that area, but that was extremely good.
It's a quite Norwegian thing.
Is it?
Okay. I think we have Solo as well.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they brought me over Solo and, Smash.
Yeah.
But
you know,
Smash, when we had Terry on, Terry Miller, he mentioned that the one thing he goes looking for when traveling to Scandinavia is Smash.
Yeah.
It was quite funny. I was over in Minneapolis. This is a long time ago. And I wasn't too familiar with the drinks over in the States. So we were at this reunion for the guy that was there, his college. And they had this huge canister with the ice and stuff. So I just took a can of Mountain Dew, and I never seen that before. And I thought it was like Sprite. So I just opened it and chugged it. And I was like, what is this? Like, so sweet and not the taste that I was going for as well. I thought like a little bit lime citrus thing. It wasn't.
No, that's partially why I like don't really like popping. Like, that's why when they gave me that Solo, it was like, it didn't taste like pop to me anymore. Like, since I started kind of like eating and healthier and everything, it tastes just so fake and like way too sweet. And it's like just not good. But the Solo was like a much more mellow taste compared to like our orange soda, which is like, just loaded with sugar. And not the biggest fan of pop, but I'll let Linus drink all the Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, as a when I meet him, usually he always got this two little bottle, this very large bottle, sipping Dr. Pepper all the time. When I joke about it when we're talking or chatting, it's not. No, I'm not drinking Dr. Pepper at all. And then every time we meet, he's drinking that stuff. So think about it when you meet him next time.
I will. What and how do you say? How do you call him a loaf again?
Limpan. It's limpan. Like limp. It's like limp biscuit, but you're like limpan.
Limpan.
Yep.
Got it.
Yeah. No worries. Where were we?
Hermann Stoltz.
Just Hermann Stoltz. He wonders what training routines outside the course do you prefer in order to elevate you as a pro?
Well, during this off season, it's just been a lot of, like I have a net and a basket in my basement. So I'll record myself slow-mo on my phone and like throw some shots, go look and analyze and, work on my timing and just positioning, and then try to do some calisthenics and just body weight workouts to kind of get a full body workout without being crazy sore for disc golf. And that was a hard thing to transfer over from like wrestling to disc golf and start training like a disc golfer and not a wrestler. And so getting workouts to where they're beneficial, but they're not going to affect your disc golf game. So finding a routine for that. And then, and then the yoga for sure. I do like the sauna and cold showers as well. I'm going to miss I got a sauna in my basement. I'll miss that on the road, but,
it's not the easiest thing on the road bringing in your van.
No, I would love to pull that thing behind, but
you need one of those tubs, like wooden tubs with the sauna.
Oh yeah,
on wheels.
That would be awesome.
Maybe for the 10K, you could probably find something like that.
I could probably find a travel sauna somehow.
Um, Do you want me to take the next one from Hammer and Stoltz as well?
Yeah, do it.
Any preference when it comes to music?
I love EDM music, and like kind of, I don't like EDM, kind of house a little bit, but like not all of it. Definitely EDM is probably just a safe bet that I like. And then alternative, like some old school rap and newer stuff, but yeah, mainly alternative and EDM music for sure. Listen to a little bit of like folk country here and there, but yeah, it's I don't have much stuff that I don't like. I like just music in general most of the time. So
good music is good music.
Exactly.
You hasn't jumped on the bluegrass train, the the ones James Conrad and Paige Pierce always talks about, the Billy Strings.
Yeah, I haven't jumped on that train yet, but I don't think I mind it. It's rare that I like will seek that kind of music out myself. I kind of have to be like in a mood for that stuff, where like EDM music I could throw on whenever and just kind of vibe to.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
Yes. And the next question is from Oscar Graham. And he wonders, now that you are with Discmania, are you going to audition for the Crush Boys?
No, I think that's kind of their thing. I know a lot of people, like whenever they join Discmania, they're like, oh, Crush Boy. But like, like I picture, like, I know Kyle Klein kind of got like shoved in there, but I kind of picture that as like a Simon Eagle thing. And if I do end up having a thing, I'd like to kind of create my own little brand. Cause I definitely feel like that's their thing that will forever be. Yeah. Forever be just them. But
is it the end of an era? What you'd say now that Simon left, is the Crush Boys no more?
I don't know. That's not necessarily that's probably an Eagle question. I mean, Eagle's still alive, but yeah. I mean,
if they happen to be on the same card, we'll refer to them as the Crush Boys for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Like it, but if that's exactly why I think it's a them thing. Is if now when they're on the same card, that's gonna be like, oh, Crush Boys reunite.
Mm.
Where it wouldn't be necessarily that if it involved another person. So,
Crush Boys unite!
Give them a cape and stuff like that.
Oh, they could do some fun Photoshop.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Oscar Graham also has a follow-up question: how will you replace, or will you, all the goofiness with Gan and Isaac and Alden?
People have been commenting a lot on that, and it's like, oh, are we gonna see you in Alden's vlog still? And every time I just say, sponsorships don't determine friendships.
Exactly.
So I'm gonna be on the vlog just as much, if not more. We've already been talking about hilarious stuff that we can do all next year, and Alden's putting some time in that and has a big list of stuff that he wants to do for skits and other little funny things. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, it's so good because it's so different from everything else. It shows
it's kinda like a little
different version of tour life.
Yeah, just like a goofy behind the scenes, like just what. And I mean, it's so funny too, because some of those skits we're like there for like 2 hours and we're just like, and the best stuff doesn't even make the cut, like just because it's either somewhat not good, like probably shouldn't put it on on YouTube, but also, I mean, we just like, we'll have an idea and then we'll just start spitballing and kind of bouncing off each other and, oh, this would be funny. Oh, this would be funny. And then we'll be just dying laughing and then try to like film the take and it doesn't work. And yeah. So, I mean, some of those are like an hour to 2 hours for a 2 to 5 minute skit. But it's like the most fun times making that, because we're like done playing for the day or something and we just have nothing better to do.
It's amazing.
Awesome.
Don't stop.
Never stop.
No.
Always forward.
No plans to.
Cool.
Amazing.
Gavin, I don't know what to say. This has been amazing to have you here. Joining our little podcast. We're not big, we're trying to grow. So
no, thank you for having me. This has been very fun. Very fun. I'm definitely gonna try to share this as much as possible to put that out there. And
nice.
I know my family likes listening to anything I'm on, so you'll at least get some new followers there.
Cool.
Great.
Look forward to that.
Yes, we always do. Anders takes everything out, and I think you had that you're not supposed to leave before everything's uploaded afterwards. I'm just saying it now, so sharing it with everybody. Cool.
Don't hang up.
No.
So hit the button, Ted.
Yes, I will. I just needs to see which one it is.
So many buttons.
It is this. Original.
Yeah. Say thank you to Björn Vandenborg for the original score. Thank you to the guy you're speaking to down here, or wherever he is on your screen, Victor, for doing the remixes and jingles and stuff. And we thank all our patrons. We thank Oscar Gester for the graphics. Almost forgot. And all our listeners. We thank Disc Express for having faith in us, pushing forward. We also thank Latitude 65, it's an energy drink brand in Sweden with a very soothing name for disc golf. And also, I would like to thank Ted and Victor, who keep doing this with me every week. It's so fun.
Thanks, guys. And Gavin, a big thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it was a blast.
And also, the best of luck for the season now.
Yeah,
and
for
hopefully.
Sure.
We're looking forward to see you on lead cards and whatnot.
Yeah, and hopefully, thank you guys very much.
Yeah. Cool.
Yes.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.